Greetings. Welcome to Confessing the Blues. Today in the studio, we have drummer to the stars, Merle Perkins. Let's roll. Merle Perkins, welcome to the Farmhouse Studios.
Well, thanks for having me here.
It's good to see you. Well, first off, let's talk about your new CD. Can you tell me about that?
Okay, the CD, I never even thought about doing a CD on myself until a friend of mine, a drummer, influenced me. He said, man, you need to do a CD where you sing it on it, present yourself instead of presenting yourself as a drummer, as a lot of people that you play behind.
Right.
And so back in the 90s when I had my band, I was at Trey's house, and I had Bridget Lockett that used to play trumpet with Otis Clay.
Right.
She was in my band, so she played keyboard bass on it and a little horn parts with the keyboard. And I just hummed the parts out to them, what I wanted on the original song. And so we recorded it on a cassette tape, and it made a bunch of copies on a cassette tape. And that was way back in the 90s, and I had never even thought about putting it on a CD until my friend influenced me of doing a CD. So I was just gonna do the drum solo from when I had my band and Pistol Pete in the band, and just put the original song on that. Then I said, well, man, I could do the other songs that I did on it when I had my band. So that's what influenced me to do it. So I went on and did it.
So it's kind of a re-release of some old recordings and also some new stuff?
Right. The original song, Funk the Blues, that was a song that I wrote in the 90s.
Ain't funky now.
And is the CD called The Percolator?
Yeah, Merle Perkins is The Percolator.
The Percolator, okay. And who else do you have playing on here?
On the tune, the Percolating song, that's when I had my band. We used to open up there because the name of my band was Merle Perkins and The Percolator.
Right.
And my cassette tape was called Coffee Break. So Pistol Pete is playing guitar on there. Mozak is playing tenor sax on there. Herman Applewhite is playing bass on there. On that Percolating.
And right.
And they also are playing on the Tina Nita New and Sweet Home Chicago.
And I remember doing Tina Nita New with you, right?
I used to do it with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, is that a Slim Harpo song?
Right.
Yeah.
But he didn't do it like that.
No.
When I heard it was nowhere.
Right.
And I think Phil Guy used to do it too.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, the late Phil Guy
right.
used to do it.
And you also presented me with a DVD. Can you talk about your DVD?
Yeah, the DVD and the CD, I kind of did this to dedicate it to my late mom. Everything that I do, I always dedicate it to my late mom.
Nice.
And that's kind of like the reason why I did that CD and the DVD, because a friend of mine said, man, you didn't play with everybody. You know, and that gave me the idea just to put a CD out with a lot of people that I didn't play with. And that's not all the people that I
right.
play with, but, and then I decided to take all the videos that with people that I did videos with, you know, and just did the DVD, and it's like 2 hours long. Also, I did a commercial. When Coors Beers first came here with Magic Slim at Blues on Halstead, and we were playing, but then they put some music over the top of it.
Right.
And had a truck coming on by Lakeshore Drive with the mountains in the background.
Yeah.
So that's on the end of my CD, that commercial.
So the CD and the DVD is called Through the Years, so it's really a story of your music through the years.
Right.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a history CD. It'll never get old.
Yeah.
Because this is about my whole life, all the people that I play with.
So if we're going to talk about your life, start off in Kansas City, and you were involved in the drum corps, is that?
Yeah, well, actually, my mother didn't know I liked drums. When I was little, she used to take me to parade, and she used to say that, every time the drums come by there, you start stomping your feet more and more.
Uh-huh.
She had no idea that I like drums. So when I moved from Kansas City at the age of 10, and I was moved to St. Louis, Missouri, I seen a drum corps practicing in a schoolyard. And I used to watch them, and I said, man, I'd like to play in a drum corps like that. And so that's kind of like where my drumming came from, you know. I played in a little small drum corps, a church drum corps called Pleasant Green Drum and Bugle Corps, and it was a church drumming small corps. But I always wanted to play with the Spirit of St. Louis because they were a senior corps and very popular drum corps. And I said, man, I want to be in that drum corps there. So back in the days, back in the 60s, drum corps is still military-like, but today it's more Broadway. But back when I was in, it was more military-like. So, like, you had to be clean-shaven and stuff. I had to process then.
Right.
And so when I went to them, they said, man, you got to cut that hair off. So I cut it off, and I came back, and they said, well, you serious about being in a drum corps? So you have to learn how to read. You have to read music, so they write all that stuff out. So that's why I learned how to read for drum corps. And I kind of owe it all to drum corps, because if I hadn't been in drum corps, I don't think I'd have been a drummer today. So my whole background is drum corps, and I always talk about drum corps.
And what do you think that experience, how did it help you musically or even in other avenues?
Drum corps, you know, it teaches your rudiments. What's the rudiments are the scales of drums. You can't play a drum set without playing rudiments. And then they teach you the ability to read, you know. So I learned how to read out of drum corps because they wrote that music out. So you had to learn how to read, you know, and stuff. It's very disciplined and technical. Drum corps, you got to be like, say, like 100 people or 130. It's got to be like one person.
Right.
Everything has to be precision. And you've been judged. Judges are judging you on the field how you played well together as a unit.
Because there's some competition involved.
They have drum corps all over the world. And when the kids are out of school, they practice. And they have drum corps competitions all in the summertime. And they have drum corps that I didn't even know was like in Japan. Actually, drum corps come from Europe.
Mm-hmm.
But Connecticut, the first drum corps competition they had was in the 1600s. The United States made it real popular, but it really come from Europe. So, and I still go to drum corps competitions today. Once you play in drum corps, it's always in your blood. I go every year to drum corps competitions.
So this was in the mid-60s?
Yeah, it was 1963 when I played in drum corps. And I never had a copy of the show. And then I kept digging in the history. And then I found out from Madison, Wisconsin, they had something called Drum World. And I come out, it was a guy in the 60s that recorded all the drum corps. And this friend of mine seen these bumper stickers on my van. And he used to be a drum major for Toronto Ottomans. So I went by his house, and he had this kind of application where you order the older drum corps.
Right.
And I was looking through it, and it said, The Spirit of St. Louis, 1960. I said, that's the year I played. So I ordered that cassette tape. I never heard myself playing a drum corps. You know. And then when I heard that, got the tape, and I heard it, man, tears came to my eyes because I had never heard myself play at a drum corps.
That's excellent. You were able to get a copy of that.
Right.
Yeah.
And now it's on CD. I had a picture that one of the drummers that took of the drum corps, that he was supposed to send me some more pictures, but he passed away and I didn't get a chance to get the rest of the pictures. Mm-hmm. So I have that one picture of me in the drum line.
That's fun. So then from there, you guys moved to Chicago at some point?
Yeah, in 1964, I moved to Chicago, and I would work jobs, and I was working for Hertz Rent-A-Car. And how I really got started in, I was always into the drum corps. I didn't ever think about playing a drum set. And one day, I went to a pine shop on 43rd Street, and I was working for Hertz Rent-A-Car, and I bought a little cheap Beverly set there, and I used to practice on this song called A Horse.
Oh, yeah.
I used to practice on that song, and I had met this drummer coming out of a pawn shop with Leonard Mayfield, and that's how I got really hooked up with meeting all the blues musicians. He was playing with this guy named Joe Evans and the Supersonics. And when I seen him play, he like blew me away because he played like kind of like a big band drummer.
Yeah.
So Leonard Mayfield was my idol drummer back then. And I went all to his gigs and stuff. And then I went to a jam and I met Johnny Drummer. It was a place on 59th Street right by the alley. I think it was called a Black Swan or something like that. And then I met Johnny Dollar. I started meeting all the cats and going to the jams. And Lonnie Brooks used to play at a place called the Fifth Avenue Club on, I think that was on Madison Street. I think Madison, California. I used to go over there and watch him play. I used to watch Mighty Joe Young and on 39th Street at a place there. I can't remember the name of it, 39 in Drexel. And this drummer named Pete, I used to stand behind the stage and watch him play. Used to go all to the jam sessions, man, you know. And then one day, after, you know, about the jam session, and then I went to school to learn how to read the whole set. And then I started going to the checkerboard on 43rd Street, and I was playing, and Buddy was looking. The first gig, professional gig I had, it was with Freddie King. I went on a small tour because his drummer was sick. That was the first gig I had playing with the late
That's a pretty
Freddie
impressive
King.
First gig.
Huh?
That's a pretty impressive first
right.
gig.
Right. You know? And then when after I did that tour with him, and then I used to go to checkerboard because everybody used to go to checkerboard.
Right.
And I was sitting down playing, and I seen Buddy peeping around the corner. And when I got off, he said, you play with anybody? I
We're
said,
talking
no.
about Buddy Guy, right?
Buddy yeah, Guy. Yeah. And I said, no. He said, you want to play gig with me? I said, yeah. So that was the second professional gig, playing with Buddy Guy and Junior Wells.
Wow. So how long did that last?
I played with Buddy Guy and Junior Wells for, I think I played with him maybe a year and a half. And from there, that was in 1977 and 78.
What was that experience like working with Buddy and Junior?
Oh man, it was better. I was playing with Buddy and Junior. I'd never been on an airplane before,
okay.
And we had a concert over in Nice, France, and I was very excited about that riding on an airplane. And so that was my first experience riding on an airplane with Buddy Guy and Junior Wells. We played a festival in Nice, France, and then you know. After leaving Junior Wells and Buddy Guy, I think I went with Albert King in 1980.
This is a pretty good start of your music
now,
career, right?
Now, Albert King, when I was 15 years old and I lived in St. Louis, it used to be a club he played across the street. And I was 15 and he used to play the pool. And he came over there. I used to shoot pool with Albert King.
Wow.
Way back in the 60s. And then when he came to Chicago, I had heard somebody say, Albert King looking for a drummer. And then I found him and went to rehearsal with him. And I talked to him. I said, man, you remember me when we used to shoot pool? He said, oh, yeah, man, I remember you. Yeah. So then I went on with a tour with him.
And I had heard that he was sort of a tough band
yeah,
leader.
He yeah, he was a tough character. But I didn't know him like that.
Right.
You know, but I knew the guys seemed like they was kind of afraid of him. You know, he was tough with the sound people, too. If they didn't get their sound right,
yeah.
He'd tell you, if y'all don't get my sound right, I'm not going to play.
Okay.
You know, so he was a character, but his plan, man, like used to put chill bumps to me, man. He had so much charisma in his plan, man. Albert King was a cat.
And we're gonna put you at home in the basement. Well, we can hear the washer when it stops. And baby, baby, when that washer stops, you better be through. And you better have a damn good explanation. Or you're gonna get whooped all under the toenail. Don't raise your eyelashes and whoop you something. If you run fast enough, we're gonna whoop down the bottom of the feet. Ain't that right, men? Speak up, men. There will be no more going to the mountain than that, putting your toes in there and getting your girlfriend friend to keep an eye on them while you slip out the back door. You better take my advice. I say you better take my advice. I hate to see you come up with a leg bit off, I mean screwed off.
Lord, I hate to shoot your dog
off. Well, I'll point out. You might need this advice. The summer ain't gone yet. You might want to take a vacation. You better listen to me, ladies, and shape up or get shipped out.
Hear my voice.
you know, I kind of find out Eddie, when I played Eddie Clearwater for 11 years, Eddie told me he got that style from Otis Rush. And so I started listening to that Otis Rush. I said, yeah, I said, I hear them Albert King licks in there. So he got, that's where Albert King got his style from.
Interesting.
From Otis Rush.
Yeah. I spoke with Jody Williams, you know Jody?
Yeah.
And he was pretty much claimed that Otis got his stuff from him, you know? So I think depending on who you talk to or guys have, you know, influenced each other.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, and I kind of like, I had got offered the gig with Lonnie Brooks, but I always wanted to play with Albert King. But then after I kind of seen how he treated musicians, I said, man, I think I'm going to take that gig with Lonnie Brooks. So I got back to Chicago and got the gig with Lonnie Brooks. And I played with Lonnie Brooks at 81 and 82, and I recorded an album with him called Turn on the Night.
Something you got, make me work all day, yeah. Something you got, babe, makes me bring home my pay, yeah. Something you got, babe, hey, you ought to know. Oh, oh, mama, oh, oh, I love you so. Something you got, make me stay home each night. Something you got, babe, makes me feel alright. Something you got, babe, hey, you ought to know. Oh, 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 mama, oh, oh, I love you so.
That time it seemed like Lonnie was really becoming very popular, right?
Yeah, he didn't even act like a band leader. He acted like one of the guys in the band.
Uh-huh.
That was how he was such a nice person, man. You know, like You know, I never seen him mad or angry. And then, you know, when I used to practice at his house, his sons used to come in and watch us play. I had no idea they wanted to be guitar players.
Right.
But then after years passed by, and then I started seeing Wayne Baker Brooks and Ronnie Baker Brooks, and I went to see, I said, man, those cats turned out to be bad guitar players.
Right.
Man, those cats are phenomenal. And well-mannered young men, he did a good job raising those his sons.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, we just learned that Lonnie just had passed away recently. But it seems that his sons are really carrying the torch of his music and his family and his legacy, even his attitude. Like I said, he was a nice guy. He's a friendly guy, a gentleman, and the kids are the same way.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, they're all the same way. And I think when you have a legend and a person that's out in the music world and they have a son or a daughter, just like Johnny Copeland had Shamika Copeland. I never heard of Shamika Copeland, but I played on a show with Johnny Copeland. But it helps that person get out there in the music world better because of their parents is a legend, and it helps them where they don't have to work so hard to get out there. And with me, I didn't have no parent like that. I did everything myself.
Right.
So it's a little bit harder. You had to work a little bit harder. Even though you have a parent, you had to do your part too. And I think about a lot of people I played with and recorded with have passed away, man. It's a lot of people I didn't play with, and like Buster Benton. You know, I did a cassette with him back at Paul Serrano's studio, and it had Lafayette Lee on it.
Mm-hmm.
He's passed away. Had Carrie Bell on it. He passed away. Had Cornelius, we call him Mules, great bass player. He passed away, and Jimmy Johnson is on that cassette, and Ron Scott, which played keyboard with Eddie Shaw. He's on there. We're the only ones still living out of that cassette. And that was on Ron Labels, which is non-existent, but I do have a copy of that cassette tape. And then also, you know, the legendary Big Eye Willie Smith, playing with him, I would have never got a chance to play behind the legendary late Pine Top Perkins,
mm-hmm.
if it hadn't been for me doing a tour with Big Eye Willie Smith in 2009. And BDI Kenny Smith, his son, is the one that turned me on to that gig, because I think he used to do a gig with his dad, but then he had so many gigs going on, so he the one that hooked me up with that gig.
Right.
So,
and you've known Kenny since he was a little child, right?
Yeah, I know Kenny. I saw Kenny when he was first started playing drums. And when I seen him, you know, he was such a little small kid. And I said, man, he's a good little drummer. You know, and I always looked at him like that, as a good little drummer.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't know how old Kenny is now. You know, he's a grown man now,
sure.
I'm pretty sure. But, you know, I love playing with his dad. Big Eye Willie Smith, you know, legend, playing with the late Muddy Waters. And then he started singing and playing. I have no idea. He's singing and playing
right.
harmonica. And he was a great singer and harmonica player.
He's really sort of filled his father's shoes.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I had no idea that Kenny sang until I went to the tribute at Rose's. And I say, Kenny, he's singing too. And he's playing harmonica.
Right.
Just like his dad. So that's phenomenal, man, you know.
Moving on, we just lost Lonnie Brooks, but we also just lost James Cotton. And you worked with James Cotton. Can you talk about that experience?
Yeah, I played with James Cotton. You know, back in '83, toured all over the world with James Cotton. And Michael Coleman, the late Michael Coleman, was my friend for 41 years, a great guitar player. He was a band leader. And we played Montrose Jazz Fest. That clip, some of those clips that I played with James Cotton on Facebook and on YouTube. But when he died, all those cats in that I play with, you know, is that I didn't play so many great people, and a lot of people I play with have gone. And me and my friend Michael Morris, who's a great bass player, played with some of them same people. And we talk about how we're still here and still playing, you know, thankful to be able to play behind great legends, people like that. And then James Cotton Band, when I look at the video, you know, you lost Michael Coleman, you lost the sax player, Doug Fagan, and losing James Cotton, then I didn't know we lost Eddie Harsh last year in November, some guy posted that. And I said, man, they lost everybody in that band at that time, and the only person that's still living is me and Herman Applewhite, which I haven't seen him. I don't know what he's doing now, but we're the only ones still living out of that band, man. Right.
Well, I guess we're, you know, getting to the age where it's going to happen, you know,
right.
And it's good that you're still here making music and, you know, trying to keep those traditions going.
Yeah, and a friend of mine, D.K. Thomas, who's my best friend, and me and John Cherney. With John Cherney, he's a great keyboard player. You know, we played on, recorded with Michael Coleman's CDs. We're going to, D.K. Thomas is taking us to the Philippines May 3rd. Never been to the Philippines. But, you know, Pete talks about, I'm the only drummer that's still living that has played with all these great blues artists.
Right.
And it's the truth. You know, I've been playing 50 plus years, and sometimes I had obituaries. I got a box of obituaries. I have lost more friends in the blues world than the 50 years that I've been playing. Over 50 friends that I've been in the world. I don't know if you remember B.B. Odom.
Oh, I love B.B. Odom.
B.B. yeah, Odom. Man. I used to play Lefty Diz.
I love Lefty Diz, too. Yeah, I wrote a song about Lefty Diz, man.
Yeah. Moose Walker.
Right. Piano player, right?
Yeah. And then I played with Eddie Clearwater for 11 years.
Right.
And I got
Eddie's still with us.
Huh?
Eddie is still with us.
Yeah, Eddie, he's still there. Played with him for 11 years, and we did that legendary blues cruise.
Yeah.
And I had an opportunity of playing behind another great legend, which is the late Honey Boy Edwards.
Oh, yeah.
At the last of the Deltas.
Sure.
Man. I got pictures of him on my album on Facebook, me playing behind Honey Boy Edwards.
And he had a direct connection to Robert Johnson, I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, all these legends, man, you know, like sometimes when you play with another person, you get, well, it's just a chant, you know, it's a big world. And we all in this university, and we all doing the same thing, man. You
right.
know, like university, we all musicians, no matter what kind of music you play, you know. So it was a pleasure, and I'm glad that I'm still alive, that I had a chance to play with all those legendary people that are not here with us today.
Can you talk about Eddie Clearwater, if you were with him 11 years, some of the experiences you had with him?
Yeah, well, Eddie Clearwater... You know, I played with him. I never got a chance to record with him. But it is some videos that when we played at Bill's Blues in Evanston
mm-hmm.
that have on Facebook or play with Eddie Clearwater or somebody, other people recorded some of the places that we played at in Kitchener, Ontario. I've seen those videos. If you go to Eddie Clearwater, back in some of the years, you can see me playing on the drums, but it's Eddie Clearwater, it's not my name on there, but
right.
I'm playing drums behind that. And I never got a chance to Carter, he usually use a already established band like Duke Overlaw.
Right.
He also used the Low Straight Jackets.
Yeah.
He won a Grammy, I think, all that rock and roll, was called Rock and Roll City or something like that. He got a Grammy from that.
So Eddie kind of, he plays some straight up blues, but he also does like a rock and roll thing, right?
Right, yeah. His idol, just like Bill Cobham was my idol, big time drummer. Chuck Berry is his idol,
right?
Big time. He loved Chuck Berry because I seen old cassette players with him, and he looked like Chuck Berry. You know, he did that scoot across the floor and bent it down. So that was his idol, Chuck Berry. And then you losing so many different musicians then back to back, and Chuck Berry lived a good music life. It's not a musician. Man don't live to get 90 years old.
Right.
So he it's lived a, life, a long time, you know.
And he played almost to the very end, too.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned your idol, Billy Cobham. Can you talk about how his music has influenced you?
Well, the first time I seen Billy Cobham with John McLaughlin, and the first album was called In the Mountain Flame. And I was watching TV at John McLaughlin, and I never seen... I didn't know. I thought he was Afro-American, but he's actually from Panama, which people from Panama look Afro-American. Mm-hmm. And I was the first Afro-American drummer I ever seen play double bass drums, and he was like a machine. I never seen anybody. So he kind of influenced me. I said, man, on a blues set, ain't nobody playing double bass drums like that. So he influenced me to play double bass drums. I was the first drummer on the blues set back in the early 70s that played double bass drums.
Who were you playing with when you had the double bass?
When I first started, I was playing with Sammy Fender and Charles Taylor, the bass player. I was playing with them. We had a group, used to do a gig. And then I played with double bass drums with Buddy Guy and Junior Wells.
And did they dig that?
Junior didn't like him. Junior didn't like him, man, but Buddy didn't say anything about him. But a lot of other people, I said, but that's my style,
sure,
man.
That's you. That's what you bring into the set. Yeah.
And when they bought the double foot pedals out, I could already play the double bass drum, eliminate carrying another bass drum. Then now all the drummers have got those double pedals playing that. But I played it before it even came out, you know. And nobody, so I don't know. I don't get recognition for it.
Right. You mentioned something about playing with Eddie Shaw in Paris in 1981.
Yeah, man, I recorded a CD with him. 1981 is called Moving and Grooving, man. It's got the late Eddie Cleanhead Benson on it.
Wow.
It's got Harlan Turson bass. It's got Ken Sadiak playing keyboards on that. And it's got the great Melvin Tilda playing guitar on it.
It's heavy.
That's a good sounding CD.
Thank you.
like I got a stack of CDs that I'm playing on.
Right, right.
You know, that everybody call. And also, you know, I played with Willie Kent before he even made a CD. I'm on an album that I recorded with him. I got it at home. We recorded it in 1989 on Michigan Avenue. It's called Big Boy Labels.
Yeah.
Everybody's name is on that album but mine's.
That ain't right.
I said, I'm playing the whole album. Yeah. My name ain't on there. So I asked Willie Kent, I said, man, I said, why my name's not on? He said, I told that guy that your name.
Right.
So my name, I got that one. I'm playing. If anybody ever heard it, I think it's called, you know, Mama Told Me or something like that. But I'm playing that whole album. Some 45s too, a couple of 45s that I played with. I don't know if you remember this guitar player named Johnny Ross.
Oh, sure, yeah, Johnny,
Johnny
Ross.
Ross. I used to play with Johnny Ross. It was always like a 14-piece band, horn band.
Yeah,
I recorded a CD, not a CD, but a 45 with him back in, I think it was back in the early 70s. And then also, it used to be a horn player that I got the 45 and Dino Alvarez.
I
don't know if you remember him, a drummer.
Yeah.
he's playing on one side of that 45 record, and I'm playing on the other side. It's called Mo and Joe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I got, and the Mo and Joe, I'm playing on the, Dino's playing on one side, I'm on the other side. And I was playing double bass drums, too, on that. And then Doug McDonald's playing on there, and I think the bass player that used to play with Coco Taylor, I think his name was, Jerry, if I'm not mistaken, playing bass. And we recorded that in a basement on a 45 record. I got a copy of that.
It's old school, you know.
Right.
But you're starting to show your age talking about 45s, right?
But you know what? At my age, people, when I tell them my age, they say, you're not that old.
Right.
People don't think that I'm the age. They said, you don't look that old. And the reason why, I never been into drugs or drinking and stuff like that, man. I tried that stuff when I was younger, but it never was for me. You know,
right.
I couldn't see my money going like that. You know, so like I never participated in that stuff.
I think the music keeps people young, keeps their spirit young, but with a lot of people, the drugs and alcohol,
right.
It takes their toll. You talk about how many people have passed away. It hasn't all been from substance abuse, but I know it contributes a lot to guys going too soon.
Yeah, I had some friends that was doing, and they had heart attacks, and the doctor told them not to do that, and they went and did it, been away, and they passed away. I don't know if you remember a Congo player named Louis Bongo.
No.
But this is back in the day, the Kings of Mine. The Kings of Mine, where the Kings of Mine is, should be a jazz club called Reverence.
Yeah.
And they bought it because the Kings of Mine used to be on Lincoln Avenue. I don't know if you remember.
Sure,
it was,
I do remember.
Like
that, yeah.
Old building, man.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people there. Like, I don't know if you remember this lady guitar. Her name was Abby. I used to have a T-shirt. She, I think she moved away maybe to California. But I've seen a lot of people come from the Kings of Mine.
Right, they used to be over by the Wise Fools, right? On Lincoln Avenue. Right?
Yeah, I used to play the Wise Fools with Lonnie Brooks. I played there with Eddie Clearwater. Played there with my band.
Well, all right. That closes out part one of my interview with Merle Perkins. Stay tuned next week for the second part. We're going to close out the show with the title cut from the Merle Perkins Band CD, The Percolator.